Good morning and hi, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We are still discussing the Super Bowl. There's been some fallout. We will talk about that. But we have to start the show today in the NBA with the trade deadline just 2 days away and the league's biggest question. Will Anthony Davis get moved? Let us dive in. The Lakers are still leading the pursuit for Anthony Davis. But AD's current team, the Pelicans, are hoping for an offer of, wait for it, 4 first-round picks, plus Lonzo, Kuzma, Ingram, and others. It is now being reported AD also has set a list of teams he is willing to commit to long-term. Those teams are the Lakers, the Clippers, the Knicks, and the Bucks. Note which team is not on that list in the Celtics. We will discuss about all of it. Nick, I'll start with you. Do you think the Pelicans are asking for too much from the Lakers?
It's almost impossible to ask for too much when you're potentially trading away one of the three very best young assets in the league in Anthony Davis. But the Pelicans are getting close now. If you are saying we want all your young players, no problem. I suggested that early on, that the Lakers would have to do that. And then you're saying, we also want you to take on bad contracts, most notably Solomon Hill. All right, that's where you're, if you're the Lakers, you say, well, that could hurt some of our flexibility to add other pieces. And then you say, and we don't want 2 first-round picks, which I think would have been totally reasonable, but 3 and maybe 4 first-round picks. What you're saying is, we want everything you are allowed to offer. You can't offer more than 4 first-round picks. Mm-hmm. Cap-wise, you can only take on one of the bad contracts if you're, and you want all of the young players. Anthony Davis is such a great player that you can't dismiss any request out of hand. But if I were the Pelicans, I would be nervous that I might be overplaying my hand slightly, only because they are forcing the Lakers to negotiate against a theoretical offer, most notably from the Boston Celtics, that if Kyrie Irving leaves, will never exist. The offer they are holding over the Lakers' head is, you know the Celtics are going to offer Tatum. But we don't know that the Celtics will offer Tatum. And the Pelicans, if I think there is a middle ground of all the young players, 2 first-round picks, and we'll fight and push and pull on will we take a bad contract. But if the Pelicans walk away from that, and this summer Kyrie leaves, and Anthony Davis stays clear, I'm not staying long-term in Boston, then Boston's best offer is going to be Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, and future picks. And then what offer do the Pelicans have? So the Lakers have not had any leverage in this situation, so the Pelicans are exerting leverage where they should. Mm-hmm. But 4 first-round picks, take our bad contract and give us all the young guys, that might be a bridge too far, even for a player as great as Anthony Davis.
Yeah, the Pelicans are in a tough situation. For one, they're losing their best player the franchise has ever had. He's made a public announcement he doesn't want to stay there. So that, it's not only what's going on now, but it's about the future. So even if they get one of these top draft picks that turns into Zion Williamson, are we going to be able to sign him? Like, how we know he's going to be restricted mm-hmm. for a certain period of time with that team, but after that, moving forward. So will they ever have a legitimate shot in the Western Conference? To me, that's one question the Pelicans have to deal with. Now, as far as when a player demands something like this, no different than Popovich, no different than the Pacers when they had Paul George and Kawhi, you got to try to get the best deal that you can get. Already, the Pelicans have a better deal, in theory, than what San Antonio got and what the Pacers got for the last 2 players that we have seen do this.
And the San Antonio trade is a cautionary tale, not for the Lakers, but for the Pelicans in this situation.
Yes.
Let me remind everyone what Kawhi Leonard, with 1 year left on his contract, which is the situation Anthony Davis would be in going into in this offseason.
Now, he did have the mysterious injury. I had told Nick and others who would listen, he's fine. He's checked out, and he's playing basketball. He's 100%.
I would say the injury question with Kawhi, while different, they're in the same category as the injury questions with Anthony Davis.
Yes.
Yeah, Kawhi, mm-hmm. there was a specific injury with Anthony Davis, the guy who's constantly banged up, right? Here was the trade. Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green for DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a bad first-round pick. That was all they got. And so that's where the Lakers, I think, can stand firm a little bit. You mentioned, Jenna, that there's been an expanded list of teams. The Knicks, the Bucks, the Clippers, and the Lakers. See, you and I were talking before the show. What do the Knicks, Bucks, and Clippers all have in common?
Knicks, Bucks, Clippers. They got contract. They got problems.
They got
problems as far as being able to match what the Lakers are going to do.
Right.
And on paper, and just the conversation sound good, but they have problems if potentially he'll sign with all those teams, and can they work out those deals?
Well, they picked three teams. I think this is very strategic by Rich Paul and Anthony Davis. We're not going to say you have to trade it to the Lakers. Here's four teams.
Yeah, they did him a great service by allowing AD, saying, you know something? We're not going to just dominate and say this is a Lakers deal, this is a LeBron deal, because with LeBron and being with Clutch Sports and Clutch Sports representing AD, this is what we believe happened. We believe they just put out some fictitious teams because you can't just demand, I want to go to the Lakers. Because typically if that happens, you're not going to end up there. So you give them, the Pelicans, other teams that potentially they can shop you to, even though that list might be four teams, it's really only.
Because they know, sorry to interrupt, they know the Clippers are not in the market because they want to keep cap space because they believe they're getting Kawhi. The Bucks are not in the market because they got nobody that is worth anything close to Anthony Davis other than Giannis, and Giannis is untouchable. Middleton is an expiring contract. Bledsoe's an expiring contract, and their draft pick's going to
be. So even though Middleton's a good player, Bledsoe's a good player.
They'd be gone.
They would go there then leave.
And so it'd be for cap space, and the Knicks just made their big trade. The Knicks, it would be the only trade the Knicks could make is if they get the number one pick, and that would be after the deadline. So Rich Paul and Clutch Sports gave the Pelicans a list of three extra teams.
Three dummy ones, one real one.
Right, knowing those three teams are not actual trade partners.
How much of this for the Lakers is, yeesh, we've been through this twice already. We didn't make big enough deals the first two times. We lost out on Paul George, potentially. We lost out on Kawhi Leonard, potentially, at least in the years and the seasons they were available. I don't want this to happen again, saying Magic Johnson. Let's go ahead and offer them as much as we can, perhaps even too much, and see if we can make this work and not let this happen.
Lakers have approached this one totally different. They've already offered more than any that they had talked about with San Antonio. San Antonio wasn't going to trade with the Lakers anyway. They have a rivalry there. It might not see him on the court, but as far as front offices and championships, there's a natural rivalry for Greg Popovich not to make the Los Angeles Lakers.
So Kawhi was never going to the Lakers.
Not via trade, not this offseason.
No. And so the Lakers are serious. So what they have offered in their young players and the draft picks, it is a substantial trade offer. It's real. Magic, I don't believe Magic's under the type of pressure that people think, because Magic has shown them, like, okay, we want this. But there is a plan B. This is the biggest free agent market that we've seen. So there are guys going to be free this summer. And let's not forget about the Kyrie and LeBron conversation. AD is the second step to rebuilding the Lakers. First was LeBron, then get AD, but you have to get AD that allows you to make that last move, and that's to get another superstar. So I don't think Magic, he's offered all these things, but he hadn't offered things that would prevent him from getting that third superstar, which is going to be important for them to try to win a championship.
So there's two points I want to make quickly here. One is the trade that I presented a week ago, I think the Lakers would be comfortable sweetening it by one draft pick, meaning all the young guys, Ingram, Zoe, Kuzma, Zubats, and Stevenson just for the contract's sake. And I said two first-round picks. Call that three. That's the one I said last Monday. What that does not include is taking on a toxic contract, because then they would have the ability to get the third star. The other point that I want to make, and this is one that I think has been missed by people, and one that Magic and Pelinka, it'd be a dangerous game to play, but I think they should make to Dell Demps. I think they need to say to Dell Demps the following, because they didn't hire Luke Walton. I don't know how much they love Luke Walton. Okay, I know you think that Tatum is here and Ingram's here. What do you think Tatum's value would be and Ingram's value would be if Jason Tatum was under Luke Walton's tutelage and Brandon Ingram for the last 3 years was under Brad Stevens? We look at these guys, what they were coming out of college. Because guess what? D'Angelo Russell, once he left the Lakers, he turned into an all-star.
Yeah, I saw him last night. He looks pretty good.
Julius Randle, once he was actually playing well for the Lakers last year, is having his best season now that he has left. So you've got two guys in Tatum and Brown who have had maybe the best player development coach in the world. We've had Luke Walton. So are those assets that much better than ours in a vacuum or just given their circumstances?
I think that's a tremendous point. I've never even heard that type of point presented as far as, listen, both of these guys have been in the league a short period of time. One guy's been in a better learning environment, that being Brad Stevens and Boston, mm-hmm. and the potential, when you talk about it that way, been like, wow. What would Ingram look like if he had been playing with Boston, all those other young
And would
players?
Jaylen Brown have any trade value if he had been drafted by the Lakers? If a guy who, when he was taken, people were like, wow, you overdrafted him. Would that be a guy
Or if he didn't have the playoffs.
Right.
Even if he just had the regular season, we saw the growth. Mm-hmm. We saw him learn how to shoot that J, yep. especially from three-point range. But what he did in the playoffs and what Tatum did in the playoffs, even though they've come back down to earth, huge difference in how they were developed.
Trade deadline is Thursday. Yes or no, this gets done before Thursday?
I've said 65-35 against. I think it's 60-40, but still against.
All right. Same, see? Probably not.
See? I think
let's just go with Knicks right now. I'm not a percentage guy.
Take a break. Coming
I think 70% is going to happen. 35% it's not. 5% up.
Okay. I did a quick math in my head, and I was that ain't
Jenna's
right.
Jenna's got a headache now.
Coming up, what makes Bill Belichick such a winner? That is next on First Things First. And you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back.
Jenna.
Brady, still fresh off his sixth Super Bowl win. Brady will tell you he couldn't have done it without his coach, Bill Belichick, who also picked up his sixth Super Bowl win. While there has been rumor tension between the two the last few years, Brady knows how important his coach is for all of this to work.
Coach makes it it's a challenging football environment. His pressure's always on, and for moments like this, because you got to rise to the occasion.
All right, CeCe, let's break this down a little bit. What is it about Belichick's system that breeds a winning environment? I'm sure it's more than just what happens on the field.
No, it's everything. It's everything. I can tell you today, regardless of the Patriots or where they are, that being Disney World, traveling back to Boston, getting ready for a parade, that front office, Kraft, man, they're trying to win number 7. They already got a roadmap of how they're going to improve next year. Now, they're going to participate in the parade. They're going to enjoy themselves. Tom's going to go on vacation, unplug his battery to be able to get it recharged up again. But from a ownership standpoint, Kraft is like, I'm not done. I personally talked to him. He's not satisfied with what they've done the last 25 years as the Kraft organization. In free agency, they will be a limited participant, but they have already started to target. What are weaknesses in our roster? The types of players that they're scouting. They're looking for good players, but they're looking for players that fit into their system. Guys that learn at a higher level. Guys potentially have 4 or 5 years of college. Guys that have their degrees. Guys potentially are married. Like, this is the things that they're looking for. That has not changed. It's a constant. It's 365 days a year. So before Tom Brady even gets ready for a mini camp, an OTA, the groundwork has been set. A foundation has been set that they're going to win 10 games. Like, they're going to be able to win 10 games. They understand it. They know how to play football. I was talking to one of the people in the NFL front office yesterday, and we were talking about New England, what makes them special. They make you defend every blade of grass. They make every yard on the football field in every play very, very important. They won't give you any yardage. They're not expecting any yardage to be given to them. So how they go about playing football, it's an old school Lombardi, Chuck Knoll, Tom Landry type of football, but it's modernized and they have Tom Brady. But the stage is set for Tom Brady when he gets there. That's why, to me, Belichick and Kraft are more important than Tom Brady. Tom's not going to do nothing this offseason. Him and Edelman going to go to Montana, play catch in the backyard, because he's got someone to to be able to set the stage for him that you know. Tom's not going to have to give free agents a pep talk. He comes in the offseason, meets a new guy. Hey, I'm Tom Brady. But Belichick and Kraft, what they do to set the stage, that's the most important thing. And that's why this culture wins year in and year out.
And what Brady was talking about there, where he says he makes it a challenging football environment, I think that is one of the most underrated but most important things they have in New England, which is, as Coach Mangini talks about all the time, it's not easy. And if you have people that are willing to deal with the difficulty of it, you're of course going to get the best out of people by challenging them. I'll personalize it for a moment. Like that we've talked about on this show, there are times where there are football discussions where I am forced to really reach back into whatever brain capacity I have to and whatever memories I have, knowledge of history, to figure out, okay, how, if we're talking about what makes Michael Thomas a great receiver, and you've got a PhD on that specific thing right there, I'm going to have to really work hard to participate at any level. But at the end of that day, I'm a better broadcaster than I was at the beginning of that day. Like, you know what would be easy for me and fun, and I really enjoy? Rank the wide receivers. And, like, and I'd be great at that. But that doesn't necessarily make me a better at what I do. And I think that's applicable to any walk of life. If you're up for the challenge, a challenge is good for you. Go ahead, Jenna.
And to your point exactly, which is something we talk about here, the challenge isn't, yes, I want to come to New England because I want to win. You're buying into so much more than that, and it's so much more than saying, oh, I could play there. I want to win as badly as Belichick does. But what you're talking about is buying into everything that comes with the desire to win.
Buying into all the parts of, we are going to drill down to the basic level of every single thing. You're going to know the rules of football better than any team in the league. You're going to know the tendencies of referees. We are going to squeeze every last minute of our workday that we can. There's not going to be any leisure time, and we're going to be better for it. Not everyone's cut out for that.
Right. I'm going to utilize this show as an example because we have breaks in between the shows. Typically a New England practice, especially if they do joint practices. They do joint practice with another team. When the team has like a little break or they're switching, say the defense is on the field, you know what the wide receivers and running backs are doing? The other team is sitting around watching the defense. In New England, they're off doing drills. They're off. So the amount of time, if we took a break and Ked and them said, hey, you know something, guys? We're going to go over what we're going to do next. Or like, it would require a different amount of focus than it would. That's what it does in New England. What they demand from you on a daily basis, it's not as much fun as other places. The only thing I can equate to in sports is like going to the University of Alabama with Nick Saban. I was talking to Clinton Haha Dixon this weekend, and he was a guy, five-star player at in high school, coming from Orlando, and he could have gone anywhere in the country. He decided to leave the state of Florida and go to Alabama because he said, it's the best football environment for me to get to that next step. So in doing that in the NFL, it's the same thing with New England. They got a small core group of guys because it's different than Nick Saban. He's got you on scholarship for 4 or 5 years if he wants to. Belichick and Brady are going to have a core group of guys who understand. They're always going to have a young group of guys coming in because you need that with the draft and free agency and developing players. But it is the best think tank for football. It's no different than you have a guy, a young aspiring broadcaster. He grows up in Kansas City. You know, he's applying for schools. He sets a dream out and said, you know something? I'm going to go to Syracuse. Why? Because Syracuse is one of the top 5 broadcasting schools in the country. I'm going to go there because it's a think tank for broadcasters. But by the way, I'm also going to apply to Harvard and Yale. I'm going to apply to an Ivy League school because that's the think tank that the best thinkers in America or the world go to because they want to be pushed. You want to go to Harvard, Yale, it's just like going to Belichick in New England. Like, you're going to be taught at a higher level. You're going to be pushed at a higher level than the other football teams and organizations out there that get the best from you. No one understands how to win NFL games better than Bill Belichick. There's no better teacher of football 24 hours a day than Bill Belichick. There's no more authentic person. Now, you see those interviews, you don't think that's authentic, but that's who he is. That's who the coach is. There's no more authentic way to learn football than what New England's doing. And because now they have the track record of success, they can force more onto you now than before. That's why Belichick had a problem in Cleveland, because he didn't have the track record.
Right.
Now he has that track record, and that's why assistant coaches, when they leave there, they don't have that track record by themselves, and that's one of the reasons why they struggle.
And the payoff for all of that work? Super Bowl 53. All right, take a break. Coming up, how much is Jared Goff to blame for the Rams Super Bowl loss? That's next on First Things First. The world featherweight champion Leo the Earthquake Santa Cruz puts his belt on the line against Rafael Big Bang Rivera live February 16th on Fox and the Fox Sports app. What up, C?
Man, you can't be no featherweight and have a nickname. Hey, my name is Big Bang.
Big Bang and Earthquake.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, collision.
These featherweights will knock you out. I like it. I like it.
They do throw a lot of punches.
Yeah, man.
Those are exciting fights.
Time now for Say What? The Patriots won their second Super Bowl in 3 years on Sunday with Bill Belichick now in possession of 6 Lombardi trophies. And I guess you could say Steve Kerr is a little fed up. Say what?
Just gets old watching the same team, you know, win the whole thing year after year. Sorry. That was really arrogant, wasn't it? It was kind of fun to say that then.
He waited the whole NFL season for the one line.
I'm smiling through gritted teeth right now.
Oh, Bill Belichick coaching him up, though. Steve Kerr, what you doing?
Rolling the ball out there.
Okay, all right.
Sure.
Hey, let's not forget the Lakers thinking about getting rid of Luke Walton. They look great with Luke Walton Golden
did.
State. Okay.
They did.
Hey, you and Belichick in the same conversation, but just that.
Oh, God.
All right, time for some stories to start your morning. The Dolphins introduced Brian Flores as their new head coach. Flores has had quite a week coming off a Super Bowl win as the Patriots defensive coordinator. CC, how do you like this move for Flores and the Dolphins?
I like the fact that even after they were very, very impressed with Brian Flores, he told them, listen, don't jump, don't overreact to this. If you don't feel like we have the same philosophy, don't hire me. But I like the fact that he comes from scouting, then started on the offensive side of the ball, then transitioned on the defensive side of the ball. You're talking about a well-rounded coach coming from the Belichick factory. I believe he's one of the most well-rounded ones compared to being just on one side of the ball. Looking for Stephen Ross and the Dolphins to get it turned around with Brian Flores as their head coach.
You couldn't have a better farewell performance than the one Brian Flores had in the Super Bowl against the Rams. The defense almost pitching a literal shutout in that game. He was spectacular. I'm rooting for Brian Flores. I think he could be a very good coach in this league. Dolphins, tough situation now. And nobody's won there at a high level in quite some time. And you got questions, of course, about their offense. But I think he's a good coach.
All right, moving on. Julian Edelman took home Super Bowl MVP honors, but some are saying he wasn't the best player on the field. Jags defensive end Calais Campbell tweeted that Stephon Gilmore should have won it with his interception, forced fumble, 3 pass breakups, and 5 tackles. Nick, does he have a point?
Listen, that's who my vote would have been for. And I think when the game is so defined by defense that if there is a standout defensive player, and there was, he's the more obvious choice. Edelman was the best offensive player in that football game, but this game was not about the Patriots offense. It was about the Patriots defense.
Edelman dominated the first half.
Yeah.
And then once the offenses didn't take off in the second half, you make a great point as far as typically in a struggle like this, someone on the defense, especially if they have the type of game-changing play that Stephon Gilmore had. Edelman took enough abuse yesterday.
Okay.
He's coming off the biggest day of his career. He played spectacular. He shouldn't have any regrets for his performance, but these two New England Patriots both stood out.
All right, to the NBA now. According to reports, Anthony Davis is only willing to commit to long-term deals with 4 teams, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Knicks, and the Bucks. Nick, do you think any of these teams besides the Lakers realistically have a shot at AD?
Before the trade deadline, absolutely not. The Clippers are not even going to really get involved because they believe they're going to get Kawhi Leonard without giving up anything. Mm-hmm. The Bucks have no assets to trade other than Giannis.
Right.
They're obviously not trading Giannis, and they might be the best team in the Eastern Conference this year. And the Knicks already made their big trade.
Yeah, well, they already made an offer for AD.
Right, and it got rejected, and so then they traded Kristaps elsewhere. There's a reason these 3 teams were listed, I believe, by AD's camp, which is he knows
none of them can make a real offer, except for the Lakers, who are just making offer after offer after offer.
All right, finally, James Harden continued his magical scoring run, dropping 44 on the Suns last night. He now has 27 straight games with 30 or more points. However, one former NBA legend is concerned that this isn't sustainable. Take a listen.
I don't think that style is ever going to win championships. But at the same time, you have to keep your team's head above water to win games. So you have to do what you have to do to win games. And he's doing that, right? Now, I think...
So are you saying you don't think James Harden and the Rockets, as constructed, can win a title?
Not with this style of play, it won't win, right? With one player dominating the ball. Now when you have Chris Paul come back and you have more movement to the offense, where you move guys around, where you're harder to find.
And Chris Paul's back, but you mean more in the...
Yeah, because listen, if you take one player, you put him at the top of the key, or you put him on the wing, and you're running screen rolls, you're always in front of the defense. Mm-hmm. The defense can key on that, particularly in the playoffs. And it's that's easy to defend.
Yeah.
It's easy to defend. Now, what he's doing is absolutely remarkable, though. And I think it's a testament to how remarkable it is, because people are now trying to minimize what it is that he's doing.
RCC, is Kobe right there, the way he explained Harden's role with the team and the success of the Rockets?
No, Kobe's right about it, but I think that people have to be careful listening to the whole conversation. Because Kobe, at some point in his career, and Tracy McGrady, my brother coached Tracy McGrady. He was the head coach of Toronto Raptors when they had Tracy and Vince Carter and developing them. So I've seen both of these players, and Kobe being one of my favorite players all time, I've seen both of these players go on similar runs or have similar seasons. Now, we haven't seen anyone, unless you saw Wilt play, we haven't seen anyone that's dominated the way Harden is. So what Kobe is talking about, he's talking about a style for which he played at, Jordan played at, and all those guys, they didn't win championships when they were playing that individual basketball. Kobe's been in enough series, and he's lost enough games trying to play one-on-one basketball. So Kobe gets a lot of heat because of how he criticizes players, or he doesn't give players necessarily the credit they deserve. In an NBA playoff series, you can't play that way. You're not going to be able to win a championship for seven games. It's too hard, and defenses and coaches are able to take that ball out of your hand because they'll trap him. If he keeps the ball in his hand, they'll trap him in the playoffs and make the other guys score. So I do understand that. He mentioned immediately, man, they need at least Chris Paul coming back, because this is not an era. Golden State is here. This is not an era where two stars is enough. And as spectacular as Harden has been playing, you still need more. You still need more ball movement and the wear and tear. We just haven't seen anyone do it to be able to win a championship, Nick.
All right, so I don't know why it seems like there is a rush from a lot of people, Kobe's not the only one, to try to lessen or discredit what Harden's been doing. He's not just keeping his team's head above water. Since this streak started, they have the second most wins in the NBA. They have the number one offense in the NBA. He is scoring at a rate no one has done over this long of a period of time since Wilt Chamberlain. And Rachel Nichols helped Kobe out there, because I don't know how closely Kobe's actually watching.
Ain't another Chris Paul
was even back.
Because
he said when Chris Paul gets back. And Rachel Nichols cleaned it up for him. He's like, oh, well, you mean what? No. So listen. Here, and there is, do I agree that what James Harden is doing right now, this exact style, is likely not going to result in a championship? Of course. Because we have seen players, as great as Harden is, better than Harden, when they are the only show on their team, they can't win a title. We saw young LeBron couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. We saw young Kobe post Shaq couldn't get his team out of the first round trying to do this. Jordan couldn't get his team out of the first round trying to do this. So I get that. But there's this overarching feel with Harden, which is you can't win a championship with Harden's general style. And I just reject that.
You mean playing style?
Yes. I just forget what he's done over these last month and a half. Last season happened. The Houston Rockets of last season win a championship in 90% of NBA seasons that have happened.
Right.
They were positioned to win that championship even after Chris Paul got hurt, if they just missed 20 threes in a row instead of 27 threes in a row. If they go 0 for 20, they go to the NBA Finals and I think beat LeBron and the Cavs. So there is, I think, some, I don't want to say, I don't think it's jealousy from Kobe and these other guys. I think it's people don't really want to respect Harden's style of play. The free throws and the enormous volume of threes. And so they try to pick away at it when the numbers say it. His team has been playing its best basketball of the year since he started playing like this, and he's going to win the MVP playing like
this. My only pushback on that conversation is Harden and Houston, they're not the same player or the same team. So Kobe was right. As they sit now, and as he's playing now, he can't win that way. I'll use the analogy of the NFL. He's like Patty Mahomes. Patty Mahomes on fire all year. He could have won a Super Bowl this year because you got to win one game. Win one game, then you advance. But in a series, like you, they lost to New England, but you think in a series, New England don't want to play them in no series. Two out of three, three out of five. No, because New England is not going to beat Kansas City in those number of games. So Harden, in a series, can he do this? And like they were last year, they didn't have the same team. Right. They didn't play the same way. Harden's got the ball far more in his hand this year. So we're making two different comparisons. But James Harden can win a championship because, as you said, in 90% of all the seasons
they would have
that bad
year.
Hamstring Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Harden did his deal. Now, Harden's elevated his game. So I'm giving him respect for not only what he did last year, but then this year, because of injuries, because of free agency, he's elevated his game. And that shouldn't be discredited. We should look at that and judge it on its own merit.
But you agree that he does need Chris Paul to come back and contribute more if they're going to have any success in the playoffs.
The reason, we're in the era of the Warriors.
Right. Yeah.
So don't ask no question unless you realize, oh, my goodness, Steph Curry. Let's go KD. Let's go. Forget about Boogie, Clay, Drake. Like, we're in an era that a lot of styles wouldn't win you no time. You can't run no triangle. You can't bring Pat Riley back here and play against Golden State. Man, you need the bodies. You need all-star players on a roster. So, for me, let's not forget Golden State because we can criticize everyone. LeBron, you can't play that way and win a championship now either.
Sure.
Because he needs other stars.
All right, let's get back to the Super Bowl now. It's a tough game for Jared Goff. The moment appeared to be a little too big for the Rams' third-year quarterback, who threw for just 229 yards and a pick. His high-flying offense scored only 3 points. Goff said after the game, "What really stings for me, especially as a quarterback, is that our defense played so well and I wasn't able to deliver. It was me. It was our offense. And I couldn't do my part. It wasn't a game we needed 30 points to win. We needed 2 touchdowns and I couldn't get it done. That's on me. I'm the guy who has to drive this offense." CeCe, what do you think? Is Goff right? Could you put this all on him?
Well, no, I'm not going to put it on him. We play too many football plays. Too many things happen because if Jared Goff, we saw Brandon Cooks break open free, and Jared Goff didn't find him. But also, if that offensive line gives him a little more protection, because when he did find him, he couldn't step into the throw to be able to flight the ball, to be able to get it there quick enough. The next throw he makes, that's the game-changing throw. The difference between that and Gronk's throw is Gronk got a little more separation because Tom Brady made one throw. If Jared Goff makes one throw, this game is different. Brandon Cook, he made the throw, but he didn't get the completion. So that's the difference in this guy. I'm not going to be a person that's going to analyze this Super Bowl and say, you know something? Jared Goff at the Super Bowl, the stage was too big for him. I saw Jared Goff play on the road and play in the Coliseum. And every time he got people in his face, it was hard for him to be able to run the offense. Tom Brady, Super Bowl 9, was it too big for him? He didn't play great. So what's his excuse? His excuse is the Rams' defense. But younger players, we don't give them credit. We don't give credit to the other defense. We always blame it on the young player. New England's defense played the best football game I've seen New England defense play in 2 years. Forget about this season, but it's been the best. It was the best showing I saw in the last 2 seasons. That's what happened to Jared Goff. Bill Belichick going into this game, Nick, was he not 17-0 against quarterbacks under the age of 25?
Last 17, yep, absolutely right.
Okay, that's what happened to him. It just happened to be in the Super Bowl. So we shouldn't continue going on just saying, oh, man, the Super Bowl was too big for these guys. No, New England, what they did from a defensive standpoint, the Rams, what they did, because they did the same thing to Tom Brady, who's been there a bunch of times, and he didn't look good. I hope that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. I don't think the Super Bowl was too big for Jared Goff. I think the problem for Goff might actually be a bigger one. And more, if you're the Rams, I would feel much better if I'm like, you know what? I know this guy's a star, and just in his first Super Bowl in his third year, he just wasn't himself. He'll be better the next time. I would feel better if I believed that as opposed to what I believe to be true, which is Jared Goff the last half of the season was not very good. Jared Goff after the Chiefs game, 7 touchdowns, 8 picks. 4 of those touchdowns came in 1 game against the Niners.
Right. Now, that kind of argument, I'd be willing to listen to because there's trends there. There's time right there. And then also, Nick, you've been on this a long time because I believe Jared Goff is going to be an elite thrower because the system they're going to have and Sean McVay. But also, I realize how young he is. But his inability right now to throw accurately under
with
pressure.
Any pressure.
Is that, a real thing.
Problem. And when we're talking about the best teams in the NFC, the best team in his division other than his team, I believe, is Seattle. Seattle's always going to have a prominent defense as long as Pete Carroll's there. The Bears. I know you're super high on the Bears.
Yeah.
The Bears are coming. We think the Cowboys could be on the uptick if Dak continues on the uptick. We like their – when you get to the playoffs, the Vikings, if they get back to it, all of these teams have good fronts. And when Jared Goff being a bottom 5 ranked passer in the league against the rush all year, Jared Goff being a mediocre at best quarterback once Cooper Kupp went down is concerning. That after the Chiefs game, he had 1 great game in the following 8 is concerning. So it was my problem for Goff is the Super Bowl looked a lot like I had seen him play over the last couple months, that drive against New Orleans at the end of regulation notwithstanding.
How much of this, CC, is that Jared Goff is a system guy and the system just failed him on Sunday night?
Well, it's a combination. I believe 99% of the players, and myself included. Man, I'm definitely not on this TV show if Denny Green don't come there and put that West Coast offense, don't put me in the slot some. Then eventually we don't draft Randy Moss. I get 4 more seasons with him. We draft Robert Smith, get a dominant running game. 99% of us are a product of that system. I'm more critical of Sean McVay not helping him out than I am of Jared Goff. Jared Goff is a developing quarterback. Sean McVay, I've seen this happen before. After the game, he said, oh, man, it's my fault I got out-coached. But after halftime, the longest halftime ever, what type of adjustments did you make? So there is a system, but there's also how much variance do we have in this system to be able to help the players? That's the part I was not happy with Sean McVay. After halftime, how did he help the kid out?
And it's up to McVay and Goff to figure out how could it be that for the first 11 games of the year, 26 touchdowns, 6 picks, a 114 rating, and we're 10-1. And over the last 8 games of the year, 7 touchdowns, 8 picks, a 74 rating, and we're 5-3. Those are decent sample sizes. What happened after that Chiefs game we all saw? That's what they have to figure out this offseason.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, would Anthony Davis make the Lakers title contenders? That is ahead on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Former NFL head coach Eric Mangini is here. Good morning, Coach.
What up, Coach?
Great to have you back. Coach, never too soon to look ahead. It's something you love to do with your schedules and whatnot.
God, I didn't even know you were up for this subject.
Oh, granted, the Super Bowl is barely in the books, but the odds are already out for next season. Yup, the odds are already out for next season. And the Chiefs, led by Patrick Mahomes, Coach, are the early favorites to win Super Bowl 54. It happens to be on Fox, shameless plug.
Imagine that.
The Rams, Saints, and Patriots are all tied for the second best odds. All right, Coach, what do you make of the list? Should the Chiefs be early favorites?
So when I saw that this topic was up, it just reeked of Nick.
No, well, I don't set the Vegas odds. Talk to Las Vegas Super.
The fact that Kansas
Super
City was the number one.
Somebody told me they came from your hotel room. It was reeking of something else, but go ahead with Nick. This is reeking of Nick. Let's go.
Look, I understand that we needed to go through this process, but the idea of looking that far ahead is pretty amazing. In terms of Kansas City, if I had to evaluate it, I would say they have as good a chance as anybody just because, well, what it's going to come down to is the maturity of the quarterback. And Mahomes this year and the success that he's had, how well does he deal with that success? What does he learn from it? And as we know, success affects people in radically different ways. Some people embrace it. Some people look to try to build on it. And then other people are affected by it. By taking a step back. But the other teams, we know New England handles change, and there's going to be significant change this offseason. So they're the most capable of dealing with all the transitions. In terms of the Saints, We're going to have to see where Drew Brees is in terms of the Rams. They don't have many draft picks. They don't have a second. They don't have a third. They've got a decent amount of cap space. You know, the team that I think probably should be in that list is the Colts. The Colts, when you look at it, they've got 9 draft picks. They've got a healthy Andrew Luck. They've got continuity on the staff, and they have $105 million in cap space.
They got the most cap space in the league.
If I was looking at everybody, that's the team I would say, okay, their best position going into the offseason in terms of building through the draft, building through free agency, continuity, a healthy quarterback, success, a young roster, that to me should be in this list of teams we're discussing.
And I don't know if you mentioned it, you might have, I apologize. They have extra draft picks as well. Like
the Jets second round pick
as part of the Quentin Nelson trade from last year.
They're probably going to get a compensatory fourth. So they've done a good job with the draft.
Right.
On top of that, they've shown their ability to do well with the draft.
So for some context, Chris and I were talking about this before the show and asked me to look it up. On this date last year, the preseason favorite to win the Super Bowl was the New England Patriots, who just did now win the Super Bowl. This obviously, now the second favorite was the Eagles, and the Eagles didn't make it out of the second round this year. And so there's this list is not written in stone. The Vikings were a top 5 team on that list, and they ended up not qualifying for the postseason. But there are, this is usually at least somewhat predictive. And, go ahead.
Well, just when you look at the Rams, you go back to the success component too. They have to now deal with the Super Bowl hangover. We saw New England be able to lose and come back, but that's a very rare thing to see that. And so their road is tough.
I would tell me if you guys agree. I think the Chiefs, while disappointed that they weren't able to pull off the comeback fully against the Patriots, couldn't get off the field in overtime on those multiple third downs, and then after seeing the Super Bowl and thinking, man, we probably could have won that game. Like, feel like disappointed they might have left the Super Bowl on the table. But when you look at what the Patriots defense did this postseason, they annihilated the Chargers. They were up 38-7 with having made one basically defensive mistake in the first 3 quarters of that game when Keenan Allen ran free. Other than that, they pitched a shutout. In the Super Bowl, they allowed 3 points. The Chiefs defense took them a half to figure it out, but then scored 31 in the second half. I would think that is a positive building moment for a very young team and a very young quarterback. And the question I'd have for you is there precedent that you can think of a young quarterback having a season as successful as Patrick Mahomes is and the next year not being excellent that doesn't involve injury? Because I was trying to think about this, like, there's the RG3 example, but he obviously had his knee shattered. Like, when a quarterback...
Dak Prescott.
Dak Prescott's team won 13 games. His statistical profile wasn't nearly what Mahomes' was. 26 touchdowns, 4 picks.
RG3?
Well, RG3's the injury one. I was talking about without an injury.
Oh. Yeah, Dante Culpepper in 2000 took over the Vikings that 2 years before that had gone to the championship and led us. He had an MVP type season, led us to NFC championship game. We got drilled here in New York by the Giants. I would say that's the closest example because we had the type of offense and everything.
And the next year you guys were 6-10.
Mm-hmm.
Next year was the worst year that you guys had had. Mm-hmm. And it was your last year with the Vikings. So
a lot of things happened totally out of his control. So as Coach Mangini would say, man, there's so many things that have nothing to do with the quarterback and their development that affect the football team. New England is the team that we know will adapt better. And last year, the reason why they were the favorite, because their roster was stacked. We didn't know they were going to get rid of guys and everything.
Coach, yeah.
This team right here at New England that won the Super Bowl was not as good as last year's team and didn't have the type of regular season. But they don't give out trophies in the regular season. They give them out in the postseason. I think Coach has a good list, especially the Colts. You need to be the Colts should be on this list. I believe that the Bears. I like what Matt Nagy is doing offensively, even though people might not believe in the quarterback. That defense is going to be a top 5 defense. So there's other teams out there. When you look at cap space and draft picks, I don't believe you can win a Super Bowl with a poor defense. So until I see Kansas City on paper, they got a better defense, I'm going to have question marks about their potential.
And then Kansas City also made the change at defense coordinator. So we've got to see
Spagnuolo,
how that affects the team, how it all fits together. And there's a lot to be said for continuity. And that's why you like New England's chances, because they have Dante Scarnecchia coming back. They have Josh McDaniels coming back. I know they're transitioning a defensive coordinator, but that's an area of strength for the head coach. And they've got young guys in that system that they'll bring up. So it's hard to look at this now without understanding the trades are going to be made. Look, guys get in trouble in the offseason. Things happen out of the blue that dramatically change the complexion of what's happening moving forward.
You mentioned the Colts cap space, just so people understand. For the Chiefs, they're right middle of the pack in cap space. They got about 17th, almost exactly dead middle. They got $25 million. The only big free agents they have coming up are really Dee Ford and, you could argue, Alan Bailey. And for the first time in a couple years, they got a first round pick because they had traded away their first round pick for Patrick Mahomes. So they have their draft capital, and you would imagine that since they don't have to pay Tyreek Hill yet and they don't have to pay Patrick Mahomes yet, this would be a offseason where they mimic some of the things we've seen Philadelphia and the Rams do, which is try to go for it in this upcoming season.
I do like where Patty Mahomes is. I did spend some time with him at the Super Bowl, had several conversations with him over the stretch of 3 days. I believe he has accepted the success, accepted the failure. Also, he's trying to get better. Now, Travis Kelce was also, I went to an event with him. He has sunglasses on the front row. Tyreek Hill, like, how do all these guys deal with being the best and all that notoriety? How does it affect their offseason training? All those things come into who's going to be the best next year in 2020.
All right, let's take a break. Coach, stick around. Coming up, Carson Wentz responds to his critics. That's next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini. So we spent a big portion of the playoffs talking about the Eagles and their unique quarterback situation. Recently, reports had surfaced about Carson Wentz being, quote, selfish as he watched Nick Foles lead his team back to the playoffs. While many teammates rushed to defend him, Wentz admitted he was not blameless in the accusations. He recently said, quote, I know I'm not perfect. I know I have flaws, so I'm not going to sit here and say it was inaccurate and completely made up. I'm not going to do that, but at the end of the day, I will say our locker room is really close. If there were guys that had issues, in hindsight, I wish we could have just talked about them. I can learn from it and be a better teammate and player and all that stuff. I will grow from. All right, Coach, what do you think will be the biggest challenge for Wentz after hearing from him come next season now?
Well, it's nice that he recognizes that he has things to correct, and it's good that he said that he's going to work on those things. The biggest challenge is, will he work on those things? And is he saying that because he wants to acknowledge that he's... Sometimes people say things just for the sake of saying it and for looking. They want to look a certain way. It's good for image. Now, that to me is radically different than actually acknowledging what your flaws are.
Reflecting.
Yeah, being brutally honest with how you can become better as a person.
Change.
And then actually... Not just making it, but then making the change when things get a little bit tough. Making the change when you're tired. Making the change when it's not easy to do. It's easy to talk about change right now. It's easy to talk about working hard right now. It's easy to talk. Everybody talks about all of the things that they're going to do. Great. Can he actually put those things into play? I found what an interesting thing in the article where he talked about his quarterback coach, Mike Groh. But he never calls him Mike. He just calls him Grow. Like, he talks about how close the relationship is. Yeah, you know, grow this, grow that. I just don't know anybody that has a close relationship that refers to people by their last name.
Really? Well, I call you Mangini on reference. Like, I think sometimes you just...
Well, you didn't know his first name
for a while. Okay.
Yeah, well, case in point. That's what I'm saying. There you go. Thank you for making that point. But it's just, like, that was a little bit... I just, in a coach-player relationship, to continually refer to someone, and they think, okay, well, how close is that relationship, and how much friction... was there? And again, it could just be reading into it.
This to me is, I was really happy to see these Carson Wentz quotes because when this story first came out, I believed there was at least a nugget of truth to it. And maybe it was overblown slightly, but I didn't think it was fabricated. And I said I thought this could be a good moment for him for a couple of reasons. One is, as Coach referenced, a chance for self-reflection. Wait, how much of this do I think is real and that I need to work on? Do people think this about me?
Right.
And because he immediately got the leaders of the team rallied behind him. We had Chris Long on this show Friday and said, I don't even like to talk about that stuff, but Carson is a great guy and a great leader. Chris Long just won the damn Walter Payton Man of the Year, not for the Philadelphia Eagles, for the entire NFL. Jason Peters rallied behind him. And that's amongst other guys, the offensive linemen almost as a whole. So when it was somewhat, I would imagine, a little awkwardness in that locker room just because for back-to-back years, he got hurt. Nick Foles came in. Last year they won the Super Bowl. This year they played really well at the end. The chance for this now to be almost a rallying point in Carson's favor, especially if he corrects whatever the mild behavior problems, I don't want to say behavior problems, whatever the mild issues were, I think all of those things could be big positives for him going into a critical year four.
Coach Mangini, I want to go down and make a list. You and I, the top quarterbacks that we have in this game today, right? Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Patty Mahomes, but let's just go with the veteran guys. Phillip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, right? Those are the best we have in the business.
Sure.
Right? At 25, Coach, tell me one of them guys that was a great leader. I'll put Russell Wilson there, too. At 25, where Carson is. Give me one of them guys that was a great leader.
I think Wilson and Brady probably, right?
No.
You don't think so?
Remember Russell Wilson was fighting with Richard Sherman.
Does that mean he wasn't a great leader?
Or that read mean? The stuff on Seattle and Richard Sherman and what they were going through in that locker room. I believe it took some time for his leadership to take over. They had other leaders on that team. Marshawn Lynch, that team was turned over to Russell recently. So they had problems in that locker room. So Tom Brady was not the leader. He didn't have to be. Drew Bledsoe was still there, and they had other veteran players. So we know about Aaron Rodgers. Is he a great leader today? So that's still in question. So for me, leadership is even harder than perfecting your skill on the field. So as Coach said, is he going to do those things? Because he's got a checklist of things that he's going through with Mike Groh trying to get better as a player. And then all those other things. How am I going to be a better teammate? How am I going to be a better leader? Those are also things you're trying to improve on. So this leadership thing to me is the hardest component that he's going to have to deal with. And from the greatest players that we have, Drew Brees was not this way playing for the San Diego Chargers. He was not the Drew Brees that we see before the game doing the chants and everything. So for me, just slow down on trying to criticize a guy who's taking over a franchise and a team. It's very, very difficult. And the leadership component is the trickiest of them all.
But also the elephant in the room. He's not just on this path, to your point, of trying to become a leader. He's on this path toward trying to become a leader 2 years with really devastating injuries, where you had to sit and watch a guy who the whole country rallied around, basically, go out there, one, win a Super Bowl and a Super Bowl MVP, and then get them into the playoffs the next year. It's hard on a guy to be able to craft yourself as a leader and be able to deal with that at the same time. I would imagine it's a lot on a young quarterback.
Agreed, which is why it's critical for him, and it's going to happen, that if we want to call it distraction, or that variable, is going to be removed before they play a single football game next year. Nick Foles not going to be on the Philadelphia Eagles next year. That specter is not going to be looming over him. Like, the shrines aren't going to be built next year. So whatever issue...
Right. Now, I don't come from the theory to believe that there is something hanging over Carson Wentz, even though Nick Foles is there. Because the organization has supported Carson. He know he's the franchise quarterback. Outside of that, people say because he's won a Super Bowl and he's in the locker room, it's looming over Carson. I don't feel that way. I don't feel as if his job gets easier just because they trade Nick Foles. And I know he's not worried about a competition because he sees Nick Foles. And his teammates have seen Nick Foles. Now, the team played better. The secondary played better. But they also did that the previous year after making a lot of mistakes. They end up getting it together later in the season, Coach.
And with the locker room, it's a cross-section of society. And you've got radically different swings in ages and cultures and all those things. So you're not going to be liked by everybody. And then the second point, a big part of leadership, it's not being liked. It's guys that want to follow you. And sometimes as a leader, you have to ask people to do things that they're uncomfortable with because you're trying to get the best out of them.
And they're not going to do it themselves.
Yes.
They're not going to push themselves over the edge.
And you've got to push them. And not everybody likes to be pushed, even though it may be the best thing for them.
And that's where, sorry to interrupt, but that is where it is critical. If there are parts of your personality that come across as smug or come across as abrasive or above it all, you've got to clean that up, because nobody wants to follow that guy. Nobody wants to follow the young know-it-all, right? And so if you want to be the young guy that turns into the leader in a locker room, you have to have those other things buttoned up to where it's one of the reasons why I think it was easy for the Seahawks to hand it over to Russell Wilson. Because nobody questioned Russell Wilson's, like, any of those, quote, character issues, and that's too harsh. But those things, you never heard that.
People questioned, was he authentic?
Yes.
People questioned, was he real enough?
Was he?
There's other guys in the locker room, African-American players questioned him as so far as some other things. So
sure.
There was some question marks with Russell in taking over that Seattle team.
And which is, but I don't think those question marks to me, I don't think they exist anymore. Andrew Luck's another one to where I don't think people question who he is as a guy. And so I think those are easier for them to become leaders, and maybe it took some more years, as you're saying, but I think that's part of what he's trying to address this offseason that he's talking about there.
And as we all know, age and experience helps with maturity and helps with perspective, and he's slowly getting that.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Before we let you go, we have a quick word from Spotify. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including Oprah's Super Soul Conversations, The Tim Ferriss Show, Happier with Gretchen Rubin, and The Nutrition Diva, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and how to feel balanced while meditating. Even if you're still wondering if the cat's been fed. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can even go download episodes for those times that you're trying to go off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance into your life. So start the year off right with podcasts on Spotify.